Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
I guess we'll find out what we're doing. And good evening and welcome to Crypto Chronicles. My name is Eric Altman. I'm your host of the program, and with me is your co-host and producer of the show, Sean Forker. Good evening, Sean. How are you tonight?
I am great, Eric. Here we are, you and I, back together again as one dynamic duo. No ambiguity about it. We are, in fact, Crypto Chronicles, Eric. Chroniclers of all things cryptozoological.
Well, that's easy for you to say.
It is. I've been practicing.
You've been doing well. A little bit about us before we get the show underway tonight. I am the host of Beyond the Edge Radio. You can hear us on the ParaX Radio Network Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. And Sean is our color commentator slash co-host slash co-founder of BTE Radio. And that's what we do for fun.
That's right. Paranormal investigation, cryptozoology, and internet talk radio.
Yeah.
That's our hobby.
That's our hobby. And I do Bigfoot research, paranormal research. Sean does paranormal and Bigfoot. I'm the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, belong to like a gazillion groups.
Don't we all?
Yeah, I consult for some paranormal groups and pretty well versed in cryptozoology. I've been doing this now for, God, forever, it seems like. And you've been doing this quite a while yourself. So we're going to have a great time on the show. And a little bit about the show for folks that are tuning in for the first time. This is our kind of premiere show where we just get off the ground and give you guys an idea of what we're going to talk about on the program and how we're going to do things each and every Thursday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. The show is called Crypto Chronicles. As Sean said, we're the chroniclers of cryptozoology. And every week we're going to be talking about the latest events, news stories, happenings in the world of cryptozoology. Plus, we're going to do a spotlight, a cryptid spotlight, on one particular creature each week. And we'll get a little more detailed on that creature, give it a kind of, put it, like I said, put it out there in the spotlight, give it its own 15 seconds of fame, if you will, and highlight that. So, Sean?
Yeah, just like you said, we're going to be talking about a spotlight creature or cryptid every week. Kind of like a special segment. But what we're really here to talk about is the latest news and happenings in the world of cryptozoology. And maybe from time to time, get a guest contributor every once in a while. I know I'm a huge fan of Dr. Carl Shuker, and I would like to have him on our program once in a while to talk about strange cryptid sightings and things going on in the cryptid world. So it's going to be a very fun program. Something different for us, Eric, as we're used to talking about a menagerie of topics. We're going to kind of keep it to within the cryptozoological realm and the wide array of topics that are in that realm as it is.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to talk about the cryptids. Now, on BTE Radio, we talk about all things paranormal and controversial, things of the weird and unusual, the strange and macabre, and we have a wide variety of topics, and we once in a while get to talk about cryptids, Bigfoot or Nessie, the Mothman, Chupacabra, that sort of thing, once in a while. We don't focus on it, but here on this show, we're going to focus on nothing but cryptids, and we're going to leave the paranormal out. The UFOs, the ghosts and hauntings, that stuff we're going to keep for BTE Radio. But for this show, we're talking about cryptids. Now, for those who don't know what cryptozoology is, just a very brief definition. Bernard Heuvelmann, French biologist, created the term. Easy for me to say. He created the term cryptozoology, which crypto stands for the study of hidden animals, zoology animals, of course. So put the two words together, cryptozoology. It's the study of unknown, undiscovered animals thought to be either extinct or have yet to be proven to exist. And as I said, those include such creatures as, of course, the king of cryptids, Bigfoot, also known as Sasquatch, Yeti, the Abominable Snowman, the Yeren, the Yowie, the Mapinguari, you name it, there's a ton of names for this creature from all around the world. And, of course, here in the United States, we know him as affectionately Bigfoot or Sasquatch, Skunk Ape, the Falk Monster, Momo, the Mountain Devil, Hairy Man, Bushman.
All kinds of names for this guy.
Yeah. So that's one of the animals we're going to be talking about, Bigfoot. And, of course, the other animals that we'll be talking about, like the Okapi, which is an animal that was just recently discovered, thought to not exist, but
Mokley Mbembe.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we're back.
I didn't miss her.
I did not miss Blog Talk Radio. This is one of the reasons why we got off of Blog Talk Radio. It's got its quirks.
I like it. I just don't like her.
Well, yeah.
You're calling back into a live show. Shut up.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but you're not live. Pip, pip, cheerio.
Well, we're back. And
yeah.
Before we left, we were talking about something. Mokley Mbembe. I was saying how it's fun to say. Yeah, and the different cryptids we'll be talking about. Eric, you know, some of the cryptozoologists that have been around for a while, they seemingly disappeared, though. When's the last time you heard from John Kirk?
He's still out there running
the
British Columbia Society for Cryptozoology. Yeah, he's still up in British Columbia. I hear from him time to time. There's a lot of cryptozoologists out there. And let me just clear this up for everybody. Cryptozoology is really not a paid profession. You cannot attend school to become a cryptozoologist. There's no accredited courses, no degrees in it. Cryptozoology, as I said, is the study of unknown animals or hidden animals, and it's a name that's given to people that study things like the Mokley Mbembe, the Chupacabra, Thunderbirds. It's a name that's been labeled to folks like us that study these exotic creatures and undiscovered creatures. So, you mentioned John Kirk, Lauren Coleman is a very well-known, famous cryptozoologist author who's written.
Friends of Museum.
Yes, the Cryptozoology Museum up in Portland, Maine.
International taking donations.
That's correct. International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, Maine, by the way. And there's a plethora of different cryptozoologists, like Nick Redfern, for example. He's a very well-known cryptozoologist. As I mentioned, Ken Gerhard. Lyle Blackburn, he studies cryptic creatures. So there's quite a few cryptozoologists out there who are doing this kind of study. Now, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that Sean and I are both Bigfoot researchers, and it's something that we've been doing for quite some time. I've been doing it close to, going on 16, 17 years now, and Sean, you've been doing this almost 10 years now.
Yeah, it's going to be year 11.
So we have a little bit of experience doing the Bigfoot research, but we also look into other phenomena as well. Unfortunately, we don't get a lot of those reports, but when we do, we check into it. Some of the things here in Pennsylvania where Sean and I are both from, some of the more famous cryptids, of course, is the Thunderbird.
Yeah, Stan Gordon, actually, at the Cabela's event, had a very good presentation on Thunderbird and Thunderbird sightings in Pennsylvania recently. It's a very good a very good topic, especially up in my area, Pennsylvania, north central Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon, also known as the Pine Creek Gorge. It's a huge area for Thunderbird sightings. And in talking to Stan a little bit, I was asking, because the Pine Creek Gorge also happens to have eagles.
It does.
That resident there. And I said, is there a possibility that people are getting these eagles confused with Thunderbirds? And by their description, Stan doesn't think that's, always, and I say always a possible explanation.
Yeah, well, the Thunderbirds are often described as these black birds in color, usually with a white ring around their neck, and the wingspan is anywhere from 6 feet to as long as 20 feet in some cases, people have described them. There was a famous case in 2007 where there was a large bird reported seeing flying next to a Cessna airplane, a small passenger plane. And the pilot of the plane actually said this thing was probably as big or almost as big as the plane that was flying over Alaska. And it was interesting to hear a report like that. Now, Pennsylvania, as I said, we get our share of Thunderbird reports as well. And one of the hottest locations for Thunderbird activity, it seems, is here in southwestern Pennsylvania, not far from where I live, a little town called Greensburg, PA, where I was born and raised. And Sean, you mentioned Stan. Now, Stan has collected and investigated multiple Thunderbird reports from Pennsylvania.
Oh, yes, definitely. In fact, Stan's collected just about every kind of cryptid report there is in Pennsylvania, and it's been fortunate you've been able to be, you know, I call it mentoring under Stan Gordon, and being able to have him as a resource that's so close and so willing to talk to us about it. It's been a blessing to have Stan around. And honestly, folks, if you ever get a chance to listen to anything or read anything from Stan Gordon, I think you'd be in for a big surprise on the amount of knowledge this man has on Pennsylvania strange encounters.
Yeah, he studied them pretty much all, the dogmen, as mm-hmm. I mentioned, the Thunderbirds, a number of Bigfoot sightings here in Pennsylvania, and other strange creatures. I mean, he had a recent report of a slug-like creature that was seen in Washington County this past year, 2011. And as they described it, it was quite large, a very large slug-like creature, the eyewitness reported. And, of course, nothing
was
found.
This was going across the road, and they kind of – were they effervescent? Were they glowing, you know, like the – they had these strange snake-like things going across the road. Huge. Are we talking about the same creature?
No, this is something different. This was seen in Washington County. There was a snake-like creature that was seen going across the road in Westmoreland County 2 years ago that a boyfriend and girlfriend witnessed that they claim this creature came out in the middle of the road. It split into sections and became like little mini snakes.
Oh, okay. That was unusual, because what I was talking about was Stan sent it out in the G-Files newsletter that he does occasionally, or that magazine article, where there are these large slug-like creatures that, you know, went across the road and they kind of glowed. It was very unusual.
Yeah, this was something different. Actually, the report of the slug-like creature I was talking about occurred in Washington County, where a gentleman who lived in the house was outside of the house in the yard doing some yard work and saw something black moving through the edge of his property along a tree line, a creek line. When he went to investigate it, he saw that it was this large slug-like thing that kind of squirmed or slithered down into the creek and disappeared. Now, mm-hmm. he didn't get a good enough look at it to see exactly what it was, but his description was that it was a slug-like type of creature.
So strange.
Very strange.
And I've never seen anything like that here.
No, I have neither.
And we do have a lot of snakes in Pennsylvania, but I've not seen anything remotely, even close to, you know, a snake breaking into segments, into smaller slug things and weird, it's like in brain suckers or something.
Yeah, I don't know what the slug thing was, but we got off a little bit off topic there talking about the Thunderbirds. But Stan had a recent Thunderbird report that just took place, I believe it was January 1st, if I'm not mistaken, New Year's Day, in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, and how he was described of this creature. And it's a strange encounter, to say the least, but the area where this creature was sighted is known as South Greensburg, southwest Greensburg area. And this area in particular, where these two women and their child had the sighting of this large bird, has had Bigfoot sightings like within a mile of it that I've actually investigated. So it seems to be kind of a strange, I don't know, area for animals, weird animals. But as Stan described the report, and he put it out on his website, stangordon.info, these women were walking in a field, open field on New Year's Day, and near a tree line they saw something black just behind a tree. And as they approached it, they could see it was a very large bird that had its wings actually tucked in to the body, almost like you would see an angel with its wings tucked in the back.
Hmm.
And they watched it for a few seconds. As they approached it, it kind of disappeared behind the tree, and that was the last they saw it. So he filed the report. The woman did a drawing, and the report is actually there on Stan's website for everybody to go check out. The drawing really doesn't look to me like a bird. It looks more like angel wings.
That's unusual. I've not seen it yet. I'm going to have to go take a look. I am not familiar with that story from Stan Gordon's story. I call them stories, sightings from Stan Gordon's website. It's always so rude to kind of call them stories because it makes it seem like you really don't believe them. But I guess sightings a little bit more accurate, sighting report.
Yeah, it's a strange report, and Stan's gotten those from that area. Matter of fact, there was a report there in 2009 during rush hour traffic, actually. This large bird landed in a tree, and it was seen at the intersection of Route 119 and Route 30, just off the exit ramp there. There was a large tree right in that little plot of land right there at the intersection, and people actually saw this huge black bird sitting in the tree. Now, I was thinking, of course, it probably was a crow or something to that effect, but the way people described it to Stan and the way he described it to me was this thing had a good 6 to 8 foot wingspan.
Wow.
When it took off. I don't know. I really don't know, and I want answers for it. But some good friends of ours, John and Tim Frick, heard about the sighting. They went down there about a week later, and in the middle of rush hour traffic again, they went right to that place with a ladder, with a saw, and climbed up the tree to saw the branch off where apparently this thing supposedly was sitting on. So I don't know. I really don't know what people were seeing down there. Another report came out in 2011 in South Greensburg area where there was a family in their backyard barbecuing and heard this huge whoosh sound. And as they looked up, they saw a large black bird fly over their backyard. And they described it as being all black in color and had very leathery-like skin. Not feathers, but leathery type of skin to it. And they were kind of taken aback. They really didn't know what they were seeing or you know, couldn't explain it. But they did report the sighting, and that's just one of many, many sightings that have taken place in that area.
Oh, definitely. You know, thunderbirds are kind of the bastard child of cryptozoology. They don't get no respect, you know, the Rodney Dangerfields. Well, you're the Rodney Dangerfield of cryptozoology, but these animals are the they don't. And, you know, a lot of it is the confusion as to what they are. Some people think they're giant turkey vultures or condors or eagles or, you know, pterodactyls even, you know, Eric. They aren't always described as feathery birds. Sometimes they're a little bit more reptilian in description. Definitely don't get a whole lot of respect from the paranormal world. And you know, the Frick brothers, you mentioned them, they do a lot of investigating that people really aren't aware of. They are really into the cryptozoology, Mothman and such.
Yeah, they are. And that's another subject we're going to cover on the program is Mothman. Something
all of them. We're taking them all down.
That's right. Something I've been fascinated with for a long time is Mothman out of Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Strange sightings that occurred that began in November of 1966 and concluded after the fall of the Silver Bridge in 1967, December of 1967. And there were over 100 reported sightings of this strange Mothman creature, Mothman-like creature.
Continuing until today.
Yeah, there are actually still reports going on around the world today that are still seen, but not in Point Pleasant necessarily. They've been seen all around the world. People really have no explanation as to what this thing is. Now, there has been talk by cryptozoologists and people that have studied the phenomenon that this creature very well might be a thunderbird that's been mistaken, a large bird. But some of the reports are rather strange. They describe this thing as bipedal, like a human, standing 6 to 7 feet tall, having grayish, dark-colored skin, wings that are often tucked close to the body or closely to the head and body. No face has actually ever been described when seeing the Mothman, just these bright red glowing eyes. And there are those who in the Point Pleasant area feel that this Mothman was actually a foreseer or a harbinger of death or doom because of what's taken place in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Of course, they had the Cornstalk legend, which Chief Cornstalk was tricked into going to one of the forts there and was captured, taken prisoner at the fort, and eventually killed. And before he died, he put a curse on Point Pleasant.
I'd curse him too.
And basically said, you're going to have bad luck, you know, for the next couple hundred years. And there was a lot of tragedies that did occur in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. And a lot of folks that still live there today blame the Mothman encounters and sightings in the late 60s on the Cornstalk curse.
Well, you know, Eric, a lot of people don't realize, and a lot of sightings take place around the TNT factory type area.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of places in Pennsylvania, or not Pennsylvania, on the East Coast, particularly a couple in Pennsylvania, where they have these ordnance making facilities. And Eric, you know, I talk about one of these quite a bit. As we're an area I do some research, and they're all built the same. They're all cookie cutter layout, and they all seem to be attractants of paranormal activity. And, you know, a couple theories as to why they may be that way is you have to understand that when these places were built, they were built during a period of an awful lot of distrust and hate, you know, World War II, that time period. And a lot of these areas were taken by eminent domain. The government just took these lands.
Mm-hmm.
And they built these facilities. And, you know, the earth, you know, especially just seemingly has a way of keeping this inherently evil or negative feeling, and these forces just exploit that. And that's one of the theories around, you know, why these things are seen around these TNT areas, these ordnance facilities, you know. And I'm not talking about just Mothman. I'm talking about ghosts, strange lights, even Bigfoot creatures. So it's a very interesting a phenomenon, not just into the Mothman, but why these areas seemingly attract such paranormal activity. And I hate to use that term because it's so Hollywood, but why these areas seem to be more active than others.
Well, the ordnance that you live close to and you do a lot of research at, I know you've told me they've stored explosives at these locations. The one in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, at the TNT factory, was a facility that was used to create and store explosives, hence mm-hmm. the name TNT factory. Plus, they did a lot of use, what people believe were using a lot of chemicals and a lot of doing a lot of unnatural experiments, in other mm-hmm. words, trying to create different chemical weapons. And a lot of folks that live in the Point Pleasant area feel that some of these chemicals actually leaked from these igloos in the TNT area where they stored the TNT and the chemicals into the groundwater and then eventually into the wildlife preserve area that's there. And there are theories that the Mothman may have been like a heron or a common bird, right, that mutated because of these chemicals. And there are people that live in the Point Pleasant area that have seen mutated animals in some of these ponds that have been formed by the runoff water from these chemical storage places. So it's really interesting to speculate, of course, because we really don't know, but to speculate what could be causing some of this phenomenon. Now, as you mentioned at the ordinance, there were the strange lights and Bigfoot sightings and weird phenomenon. That's a lot with what happened at the TNT plant. There were strange lights in the sky, UFOs particularly seen over the TNT area and along the Ohio River. And there were also poltergeist activity. Men in black showed up in Point Pleasant. There were reports of strange static and strange noises heard on telephones and TV sets. There's a great story about a gentleman by the name of, I want to say his name is Merle Dixon, but that's the guy from Walking Dead. I don't have his name right in front of me, but I believe his first name was Merle. And he had a really interesting encounter with his dog. And one night he was at home, and this happened just right before the big flap of sightings took place in Point Pleasant. He lived outside of Point Pleasant, about 50 miles. And sitting at home that night, watching TV, his TV began to give off a very high-pitched, like, if you remember one of those old crank sirens, fire sirens, they used to give out, right.
Yeah, I remember.
He was sitting there watching TV, and his TV began to make that high-pitched whining sound. And his dog outside began to bark and carry on, so he went outside to see what was going on. And he lived on a farm, of course, and on the property about 100 yards away, he was seeing these red lights in the field that he described looking like bicycle reflectors, but they were moving. And his dog took off into the field to chase after these strange lights. And, of course, Merle got pretty upset and decided to hightail it back in the house, which he did. And when he got back in the house, he decided to go look for the dog the next day. He wanted to go back out. The dog disappeared. Was never seen from or heard from again.
That poor dog.
And, it's a strange, weird phenomenon. But apparently that was probably there's one before that, but that was really the first strange occurrence to take place in the Point Pleasant area.
So it really begs to ask the question, is Mothman really a cryptozoological entity or a paranormal entity? I guess we really don't know. That's one that kind of falls into both categories.
Right, and I don't call it really an animal, a cryptozoological animal. I call it a fringe cryptozoological animal.
Well,
because
that would make sense.
Yeah, it's on the fringe. We don't know if Mothman was actually a mutated bird, a heron, a large owl that people were seeing. We really don't know. So to me, it's one of those fringe type of animals. You know, no one's ever found the remains of the animal. No one's ever captured it. No one's ever videotaped it. Although there are some strange pictures on the internet that claim they are, but it's a very unusual phenomenon and something we'll get into a little more detail on a future episode.
Oh, always trying to get all the information out there for everybody, Eric. You know, Mothman is something we can't cover in 15 minutes, you know, something that has to be really covered, you know, sequentially over time.
Yeah, there's a lot more to the Mothman story, and we're just touching on the tip of the iceberg right there with just that little bit of an intro. But as I said, there was over 100 sightings. There were strange UFOs in the area reported, paranormal phenomenon in the way of poltergeist activity, large pounding noises on the outside of homes, really weird time in Point Pleasant. And what's great about Point Pleasant, if you've never been there, and they still really kind of rely very heavily on the Mothman legend for tourism for that town.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it does bring a lot of money in to that area. They have that really neat statue there. And they have the annual Mothman Festival?
Yeah, that's in September. Jeff Walmsley puts that on. And it attracts literally thousands of people to the three-day weekend event. And they've got tours of the TNT area. They have a Mothman Museum. They've got speakers that come in from all over the country. And they talk about the Mothman phenomenon. They even have some witnesses that are still alive that do come to this Mothman Festival, and they talk about their encounters, their sightings, and stuff like that. So
it's an awesome event.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jeff Walmsley, we've talked to many times. He's a very nice guy, good fella.
Oh, yeah, and he's very well-versed on the Mothman phenomenon. Maybe we'll get him on the show one time with us to talk a little more detail about it.
Well, he better be well-versed in it. He runs a museum.
Yeah, he does. And he, along with Donnie Sargent, wrote a couple books on the Mothman phenomenon, as has Lauren Coleman. So it's an interesting phenomenon. Now, another topic we'll be getting into discussion, something that I'm kind of a fan of, but really not that well-versed in it, is the Jersey Devil.
Ooh, easy.
Yeah, you're pretty close to the state line there yourself. So.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to start putting stuff outside, some salts around the house.
Well, the Jersey Devil, or the Leeds Devil, or the Jersey Gargoyle, as it's called, is an urban legend, as I would call it. But it may have some truth to it, because there were sightings that were recorded and reported by pretty well-known individuals, like Napoleon Bonaparte's brother saw this thing back in the 1700s.
Napoleon Body Parts?
Bonaparte.
Oh, okay.
You know, Napoleon, the French battle.
I got you.
Okay. His brother had a sighting in the 1700s. And in 1909, actually, during a week period of time, there was an outbreak of sightings where people were seeing this thing day after day. Literally hundreds of people reported seeing the Jersey Devil, whether they were traveling in a trolley car or police officers saw it. They closed down schools. They shut down businesses because of the number of sightings that took place in the Pine Barrens and in some of the small cities out there. Police even reportedly shot at this creature back in 1909.
because that's the great thing to do. When you don't know what something is, just shoot it. What the hell?
That's it. But the phenomenon, much like the Mothman phenomenon, it's interesting because there really isn't a lot of physical evidence to support the creature's existence. There's never been bones found. There's never been a carcass. No real good photographs or videos. Of course, there was the sightings that took place in that summer of 1909, but there have been sporadic sightings since then. And a good friend, Lon Strickler over at Phantoms and Monsters, has several reports on his website of people encountering or seeing the Jersey Devil. And matter of fact, there was a group that was formed called the Jersey Devil Hunters that I don't know if they're still in existence or not, but they were together for a while and actually investigating these cases of reported Jersey Devil sightings.
You know, we could do an entire show on groups that are existing that don't exist anymore.
Yes.
I mean, we've been around to see like 98% of them come and go.
That's about it. But the Jersey Devil's a fascinating fringe cryptid. And I'll put him in that category because we just don't know what this thing is. And there are people.
You could put a lot of things into that category, though. Honestly, I mean, there's so many. We don't know what half this stuff is. We have a lot of good guesses and a lot of good assumptions, but you know, nothing concrete. And that's the real kind of downer. Being a cryptozoologist for so long is that you're following the sightings of these creatures to catalog or document them, and so long. You know, for so long we've gone after these and have no documentation or physical evidence that is really definitive. And that's the frustrating part. And I believe that's why science gets frustrated with us, because we're so, quote-unquote, romantic that we just ceasingly – well, we never cease, you know. And that would be a – I think that would be a great – crap, I lost my train of thought there for a second. I hate when I go on these tangents and I lose it. I'm sorry, guys.
That's every day.
it is every day, but a lot on my mind this week. It is. We don't cease doing it, and it is kind of a problem. I mean, when is enough enough? But, you know, the fact of the matter is every day we are starting to get closer to solving the truth. Look at the Bigfoot phenomena, Eric. The more and more we stay the course and try to document and get physical evidence, we get closer. Now, are there knuckleheads that interfere with that? You betcha. We deal with the knuckleheads every other month and every other day.
Every
and
other
some
week.
Some of them will go away eventually. Others will have to be killed. But
I've got the lion back of my car.
Just as a side note, Beyond the Edge Radio and Life Paranormal does not condone harm of any kind of physical nature on anybody. Whether it be shooting, dragging, hanging, stoning, you know, you name it. We don't condone it. It's just a thought. So if you happen to go out there and do one of these things, don't blame us. Anyhow, it is frustrating, and we do have the detractors from it. But if we stay this course just a little longer, I think we may actually get somewhere.
Well, there are some cryptid creatures that we are getting somewhere with. And you mentioned Bigfoot, of course. There are some animals that we're actually finding out are hybrids of other animals, like, for example, the chupacabra in Texas and Arizona, now in Oklahoma. There was just a recent chupacabra sighting that took place down there. And this is not the chupacabra that was reported in Puerto Rico, mind you. The one in Puerto Rico was this alien type of being they called the goat sucker, and it literally supposedly fed on the blood of goats. It would leave puncture wounds in their neck and drain them dry of blood.
The guy that's in our logo.
Yes. Yeah, that's the true chupacabra. Mm-hmm. Now, the chupacabra I'm talking about that has been reported here in the United States is more than likely a hybrid of a coyote or a coy dog or a blue dog, some kind of dog, canine with really bad mange, it seems to be the case, because they have collected specimens of these animals. I know in one of the Monster Quest episodes, Ken Gerhard was on and featured where he actually studied and looked at the remains of one of these canines, or as they call them down there, chupacabras. Just recently, about a week ago, a guy in Oklahoma by the name of Craig Martin took pictures of what he said was a chupacabra. And it was this dog-like creature, or animal, that was feeding on a dead carcass of an animal. And he got these pictures of it. And he says it's a chupacabra. But, you know, they have scientists come in from the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife look at it, and they said that what they think they're dealing with is not a chupacabra so much as in the terms of, you know, like I said, the Puerto Rican alien scaly green-looking thing. This is more probably like a coyote or a hybrid of a coyote. And it's easy to get those kind of confused because they gave it the name of chupacabra. But that's one of the animals that, even if it is a hybrid or some kind of undiscovered canine, there's proof of that existing. I mean, they've gotten evidence of that.
Well, you know, my issue when we start saying hybrids is, first of all, like 87% of the people that say hybrids have no damn idea what they're talking about. Some hybridization is just not possible. You know, like the Jersey Devil, that, you know, you can't bastardize 27 different animals and say, oh, it's a hybrid. It just doesn't work that way. Genetics says it's impossible. You know, different types of, you know, canines, you know, that might not have been, you know, thought to have mated before would be a little different. You know, like wolves, Eric. Wolves, you take a wolf and a regular dog, now you have some kind of hybrid, you know, hybrid wolf dog. But, you know, a snake and a goat ain't going to have babies.
That's a little creepy. It's like the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Exactly. But, you know, but I think we have to put that out there because there's no – some folks in this field, you know, just want to lump everything together. And it's real dangerous. I think we have to get people trained. And you heard Dr. Meldrum say it. Into the citizen scientist, where they're a little bit more informed and knowledgeable about what's going on. I think if anything's being proven from this whole Dr. Ketchup thing – is that more people should be a little bit aware of what's going on out there. I know nothing about genetics. I'm not a geneticist, okay? That's not my cup of tea. I didn't go to school for 25 years to learn something, you know, that I'll never use in my life. It's just not, to me, not my cup of tea, but it doesn't mean we should be ignorant of it. I said Dr. Ketchup, didn't I?
Yes, and that's a good analysis of the whole
thing. Well,
situation.
I'm not a fan of her. She should go back to neutering animals and leave the Bigfoot to people that can actually do comprehensive research.
Oh,
and I won't get into that until our next show, Bigfoot, America's Favorite Monster, next week. It's irritating, and we have to get back to some kind of science-based platform where, you know, folks that want to be in this research legitimately – you know, we have a starting off point, and we all have this common ground that, you know what, we may not all agree on everything, but damn it, here's our platform.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we're open-minded enough to discuss any and all possibilities and to entertain any and all possibilities, but it doesn't mean that we're going to believe in those possibilities.
Well, because some of it's garbage.
It is.
People that don't have an explanation, well, I'll answer it with another mystery, or you know, I'll answer your question with 17 other questions that I don't have the answers for.
That happens quite frequently.
It does, and it's not fair to the people that are really passionate about it and really want to get to the bottom of this mystery. And we've lost some good cryptozoologists over the years that were really science minded, you know, and we owe it to them to keep going in the scientific fashion.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing of cryptozoology, is it's the study of unknown animals. It shouldn't be the speculation of unknown animals or the conjecture of unknown animals or my hypothesis of unknown animals. It should be the study. So we can scientifically study these animals and find out if there's any legitimacy to them or not.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know until we – and the issue with science doesn't want to look at this stuff. You know, they want to throw it out right away and say, oh, it's garbage, it's junk. But, you know, honestly, the basis of science is so unscientific, it's not funny. You know, mainstream scientists don't want to seriously look into an honest mystery. They want to stay with what's comfortable.
That's correct, yeah.
You need to get back into the mind frame. But you know what? Maybe there is a realm of possibility to this. Let's start exploring it and let's see what the scientific method takes us before we draw a conclusion immediately and say it's not possible, it can't exist. And that's where I respect Dr. Meldrum quite a bit, Eric, is that he looks at this, and sometimes he's a little bit more romantic on some things than I would be, but he looks at this objectively through the scientific lens, and more of us need to do that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Hey, we've got about roughly about 12 minutes left before we have to call it a night. So why don't we open up the phone lines if anybody would like to call in and join the conversation. You're certainly welcome to do so. The guest call-in number is 619-639-4606. Again, 619-639-4606 if you want to call in and just throw your two cents in there with us. we're just kind of casually discussing cryptozoology tonight and cryptid creatures in our premiere show here on Live Paranormal on the Blog Talk Radio Network. And just a kind of a preview and a look of things to come on the program. Now, I can't honestly say how permanent the show is going to be because we're giving this a test run to see how well it's received, and hopefully we'll be on for a while. But as I was saying at the beginning of the show, what you kind of can kind of expect on the program is us discussing the latest events, the latest news, stories and happenings, strange sightings that are taking place around the country. Mm-hmm. And every week we're going to try to focus on one particular cryptid in our cryptid spotlight. And next week, of course, we'll be discussing Bigfoot in the majority of the hour that we're on. But tonight we're just kind of doing an open discussion about, pretty much anything cryptozoological. So if you want to join in the conversation, please feel free to call in 619-639-4606. And this is the Cryptid Crypto Chronicles. I'm going to get used to saying that.
Yeah, what he said.
Yes. So used to saying Beyond the Edge Radio because that's what we've done for the past 5.5 years. But this is the Crypto Chronicles, and I do believe we have a call waiting.
Yay, callers.
Let's go add this caller to the show with us here.
All right.
From the 724 area code. Welcome to the program tonight.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. This is Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Oh, hey, Brian. That's a familiar voice.
Yes, it is. And speaking of cryptids, Brian, tell everybody about your group.
Yes, the new group that I formed, which actually would have been last year, is Center for Cryptozoological Studies. It's kind of an offshoot of my of our older group, which we still have, is Q, the Center for Unexplained Events. And kind of like what you're doing with your radio show, we've decided to take all of the cryptid sightings that we get or that we research and just move them over under that realm. And still take the UFO and the ghosts and any other unknown anomalies and still research that through Q. CCS is a it's an open membership. You know, we encourage we look for more people. You know, we want to get out there and investigate some of these sightings. We want to get some sightings. We want to investigate some of these areas. We just don't want to just take your report like some researchers do out there and just say, hey, I just talked to the guy on the radio or the phone. We like to actually try to get out there, try to get some physical evidence, see if there's anything to some of these stories. So we're building up our researchers in Pennsylvania and some neighboring states to help us do that. So we're excited about your show, too. So,
well, thanks. We're excited about it, too. And, of course, we'll have you on the show with us from time to time to talk about any new reports or new interesting developments that your group is researching or investigating. You know, we like to have we don't want to have a specific guest on each week, but if you've got a news story to share with us or something going on, we certainly welcome you to come on and tell us all about it.
Always looking for sources on our program. And folks, if I could say one thing about the caller on the line, don't trust. No, I'm kidding. Brian Brian and Terry are two of the nicest people you'll meet and two of the most legitimate researchers you'll ever meet. And we're proud to call them friends and fellow researchers, and check them out. They're great. They're great folks.
They are. Yep. And Brian,
thanks,
you can
man.
Make that check out. You can make the check payable to Crypto Chronicles. Just kidding.
That was nice. Nice, but, Eric.
Thank you.
We take paid endorsements.
That's right.
But this is a great show to have, though, guys. I think. And like you started to mention about some of these cryptids, there's just a lot out there. I'll be on one show when you talk about this dogman phenomena, because there's not very many researchers that even touch this phenomena. We've investigated some of the sightings, talked to some of the people. So, well, if you dedicate a show to that one time, I'd definitely like to be on for that. So,
yeah, we'll definitely have to get you on there. Oh, sounds like you have a dog man at your house there.
That's my cat.
That's the
my
cat man.
Jumping all over me.
It's a strange cryptid. It's the cat man. Look out.
It's the cat man.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in, Brian. We've got more calls waiting to get on the show with us here. Give out your website again.
Basically, the website's not up yet, Eric, but you can always go to centerforunexplainedevents.com, and we have some sightings on there still. So.
Very cool. We look forward
okay.
to talking to you very soon and sharing with us some of your research and some of your reports that you're getting in.
All right. Thanks, guys. You have a great night, man.
Too, bud. Take care.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay. Bye.
right, we're going to go to the 401 area code. We've got somebody standing by. 401, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Lexi from the show that was just before you, Cauldron of Knowledge.
Hello.
And welcome, first off, welcome to LiveParanormal.com.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Well, I'm calling from Rhode Island. This is where I live and breathe.
Oh, excellent.
And, well, Rob was suggesting that I call in because, of course, I have actually had a Bigfoot sighting right here in Rhode Island.
Oh, you're the second person I know of that's had a sighting in that area.
Really?
Sure. Yep. Dina Palazzini, a good friend of mine who actually...
I know Dina very well.
The founder of Bigfoot Seekers. Yeah, she had a sighting...
Yes, I know Dina very well.
Yeah, had a sighting in back in the 80s. And yeah, a good friend of mine. So, yeah, very cool. Tell us about your sighting.
Well, my sighting, of course, was around the same... Well, actually, hers was in the 80s. Mine was in the 90s. I was investigating doing paranormal investigation of a local graveyard that is listed in occult books as being a good place for summonings, and I wanted to see if there's any truth to the legends of the spirits from the area. And I kind of like to debunk those things. And while we were doing our investigation, we ended up picking up our recording equipment that we had left there unmanned to see if we could get any kind of rogue EVP. There he was standing about 30 feet from me. He was about almost 7 foot tall and actually kind of didn't even look like a full mature. Looked almost, late, like what you would consider the form of an 18-year-old would be as opposed to a 25-year-old male.
Like a juvenile.
A juvenile, young adult.
Juvenile, but, what you might consider would be close to being an adult.
Okay.
But just wasn't as bulked out as you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And the body fur or hair, whatever you want to call it, was not as long as I've seen other people depict.
Mm-hmm.
But it was brown with a light greenish, with a greenish cast to it. And it actually wound up running alongside us in the woods as we were driving away.
Oh, wow.
I was trying very hard to get my team out of the area without it didn't make any threatening moves towards us. It just kind of stood there watching us, but I didn't trust my team as much.
Did you feel threatened by it?
I felt no threat whatsoever. I mean, I was on the driver's side of a car. It was past the car and into the woods a little bit, just like through the first row of trees.
So you're kind of more concerned than frightened for your team members.
I was concerned that my team members might try to chase it down or something and get themselves in trouble. I didn't feel threatened by it. I was more concerned of the college-bound guys in the graveyards that were just like, oh, they're in there.
They tend to do those things.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's very interesting. When was this again?
This was 1990.
Okay.
And actually, along with Dina, as you probably know, Dina was on Finding Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
My story was one that was supposed to be featured. We did film it, but it was on the cutting room floor by the end of the actual episode time. But we did actually film it all, and I got my 5 seconds of fame on the TV. But that's not what I was really looking for.
Well,
but I thought of it. But another kind of cryptid that I was thinking about mentioning to you folks would be, because I'm here in Rhode Island and very close to what we call the Bridgewater Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
There's also in a Native American legend of something called a puckwudgie.
Oh yes. Yep, the 4 foot tall little human looking trolls.
Yes, with kind of almost like porcupine type back, as I've seen some of the pictures depicting. But I thought that would be another one to mention to you folks to, something you might want to look into as well.
Yeah, but we're definitely going to have to get a couple of experts on the Puckwudgie. Christopher Balzano is one of them. We'll have to get him on to talk about those.
I know Christopher Balzano, yeah. He's a nice person. He's a great person to interview, I'm sure.
Very good. Well, we're just about out of time here, so we've got to say goodnight, Lexi, but we want to thank you for calling in.
Yes, most definitely.
And we invite you to join us on the program next week and listen in and, And if you have any other stories you want to share with us, certainly give us a call and share them. We'd be happy to talk with you again.
We like stories.
I'd be glad to. And, you know, if there's anything you folks need, I'm just a show before you, so, you know, I'm around.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
All right, Sean, excuse me, we got about a minute left here on the program, actually about 45 seconds before we got to call it a night. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the show tonight. Thank you, Sean, for joining me on our premiere episode.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Always great to talk crypto. And Eric, it's great to be back with you, brother.
Definitely is. I'm glad we're back together. We started this whole crazy thing back in 2007 with BTE Radio, which you can catch Sunday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network. But we'll be back next week. Thursday, 8 p.m. start time, and our feature 9 p.m. 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern.
There we go.
And our feature for next week's show will be Bigfoot, and you can check out our website, which is Sean.
Our website is cryptochronicles.weebly.com for the moment.
I caught you off guard.
You did. Damn it.
So stop by and visit our website. We're on Facebook as well. Drop us a line, and we'll be happy to hear from you. So thank you all for tuning in to our debut show, our premiere show here on Live Paranormal. And we'll see you all again next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. Central.
You betcha, folks. Looking forward to it. See you next week, guys.
Good night, everybody.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.